Welcome to the Love Cars on the Grid podcast, your global motorsport roundup with me, Tiffany Dell, and Paul Woodman.
Welcome to Love Cars on the Grid, your global motorsport podcast roundup. From all over the world, we look back at the weekend of motorsport and what exciting things are happening, what not so exciting things are happening. There was world rallying, there was world sports cars, there was Formula E, there was MotoGP and IndyCar at Indianapolis. There was BTCC at Brands Hatch. There's always NASCAR. But what was the most entertaining? Before you tell me what the most entertaining was, let's go on to some news.
There is a bit of news. We're going to do them on the program in reverse order. We're going to start with the least entertaining and build up to the most entertaining, because a lot of different stuff went on last weekend.
There was a lot of different stuff. I'm going to start off with some news, because the irony of this, Günther Steiner is suing Haas, and now Haas are suing Günther Steiner. If you haven't seen this, it's all about his book, and he's giving away some secrets, and they're just falling out. I really don't like this at all, when people fall out with companies.
Günther started with some unpaid commissions. And what a commission is, that was what he says in the legal
sponsorship
team.
Bringing in sponsorship.
Oh, is it bringing in sponsorship?
Yeah.
10% of money brought in, that sort of thing. Oh, okay. Then Haas are now suing him for the contents of his Surviving to Drive book. I haven't even seen it. I didn't know it was out, but I haven't read it.
He's had a massive tour all over the place. It's been super popular. I wonder how many he's sold. I wonder if he's sold as many books as you have.
Doubt. No chance. but about all the Haas logos and the Haas pictures in the book he didn't get copyrights for, so that'll probably be solved in about 4 years' time out of court deal.
It is a shame, because he was so good for them and he really got them on the map, this sort of struggling team. But Gene Haas is no mug either. You know, he's been around a long time and he's a very successful businessman. So I hope it ends amicably.
Adrian Newey was off down in Monaco, good place to be. I'm not sure whether he was looking for somewhere to park his boat for the year. Of course, he might be on the boat. But of course, Monte Carlo is quite near to Ferrari land. He was mainly there to drive his glorious Lotus 49B, the car that actually won at Monaco, I think, in Graham Hill's hands. And he's a quick little driver, Adrian.
He
doesn't muck about. And so I think he finished fourth or something against some youngsters in slightly more modern cars, but his son's
very fast as well. I didn't know whether his son was racing as well on the weekend.
I haven't seen all the results from Monaco. No, I didn't look.
But I did hear some clips you see on Twitter and Instagram and stuff. Oh, you missed the noise of those V10s and V12s and all sorts of things like that. Amazing.
Well, of course, Zach Brown, I think, was racing his McLaren. His Williams. I don't know how he got Zach Brown. It's just such an epic weekend that. I mean, if you want to go on holiday to Monaco, that's the weekend to pick. Forget the Formula One fracas. Just go to the historique.
Yeah.
What else was going on in the news? No, there really wasn't. Max Verstappen has decided to put his foot in the door about the super license point. I don't know why Max is. I know he was. The new ruling, if you have to be 18, I think, was brought in because of Max. Because they're getting younger and younger and younger. And I just think you do have to eventually write a rule. The super license points came in to stop, you know, people just buying drives because they've got billionaire dads. And somehow we didn't do a big enough points level because Stroll managed to get enough points.
Mazepin was worse.
He won the Formula 3. Yeah, Mazepin. So they did put the point. It's a good idea. You have to be a certain talent to have done a certain amount of results. And there has to be an age limit somewhere. You know, otherwise, 1 year, you know, someone will come on with a 15-year-old who's pretty. I mean, they're so young, winning Formula 3 races.
What's wrong with that? If they're good enough to drive,
I don't think it's good for the human race or for human beings. I don't like Olympics. I don't like any sport bringing these children in. You know, the Russians coach 3-year-olds. They bring every 3-year-old into a lesson and see if you've got a natural athletic talent.
But Tiff, if you're an athlete of any, if you're a world class athlete of any kind, you're starting from an incredibly young age. So if you are ready, and your coaches and your everybody around you, your team, most importantly, think you're ready for it, then what does it matter?
Because I just think you're pushing someone too early, even if they're two footed. I just think are you having no limit at all? 15, 13, 14.
But I get it. But what about, okay, so it's not a sport. It's not a sport in terms of strenuous whatsoever. Darts are the complete opposite, actually. But the mental stress, Luke Littler, 16-year-old sensation, sensation. Should he have been banned from appearing in World Cups? Because it's the mental pressure of this.
Well, you'll have to do so much practicing when you're young. To get there at younger age, you don't have any schoolboy-ness. I mean, all these carters now and young racing drivers, they're just racing drivers. And they're all on Twitter. They all put professional racing driver. Well, daddy's paying the pocket money. And I think did, because there were some quite high-placed female tennis players. I forget, Tracy Austin.
Tracy Austin.
Who ended up in rehab at 18, burnt
so
out.
So many.
Sport had burnt them out. Well, I know because they get burnt out by the pressure when they're 12, 13, 14.
And
I think also, if you know you can't do it till you're 18, there'd be no expectation. It's in the rule book, so you can build your plan. Otherwise, you're looking over your shoulder, oh God, 15-year-old John's beating me, I better do more when I'm 14. And yes, no.
Okay, so let's protect Max. Our youngsters.
You're right.
I'm with you there.
Exactly.
There's a limit. However, Colin Herter.
Toto says it's not happening anyway. It's not happening.
Colin Herter, unbelievable driver, super talented driver. Why can't he drive in Formula One if he wanted to? He would refuse his super license.
I agree, you should appeal. For certain circumstances, I think you should always be able to appeal so they can appeal Kimi's 17-year-old, and then they'll go in a jury of six wise men and say, no, I'm sorry, let's just wait at least 18. It's only August or September. It's literally two Grand Prix he might miss if it was Williams wanted to put him in.
Forget the age. We agree with that. Protect the
matter. You say, we'll look at the point system we've allocated for IndyCar over the years. Maybe we didn't give them enough points. We might rechange it. So maybe IndyCar champions will get more points in the next few years coming. So they'll sit back and look, looking at your past record, the amount of racing you've done, we know you're not going to be a Liberty. We know the team wants you to drive. So I think in that occasion, you can have dispensations. I don't disagree. You could dispensation Kimi Antonelli if you wanted to, because he's 17, if a wise man did. So...
Let's move on to the most unexciting thing that happened this weekend.
Yes, well, that's
in
my
your
thoughts
opinion,
this weekend.
In terms of racing, we're doing it the opposite way around.
Reverse. No Grand Prix, but there's an awful lot on. So a lot of this watching is times 30. The Sky Box is a great asset to my life. So I can watch so much motorsport. So I just thought in reverse order, we'll build up to what really got me excited the most at the weekend. And we begin with a formula which I'm now officially on this very podcast announcing my retirement from ever, ever, ever watching another minute of Formula E. I have tried. I'm very much a believer that if you don't try something, you can't criticize it. You've got to try it. And I've watched every Formula E race. I've followed it and I've analyzed it. And I've understood the reasons for the racing. But they've got these Peloton things. So now they're expanding onto bigger circuits. So they're going away from the little tight, twiddly, single-file tracks. So they've got more power on these cars so they can perform. And, of course, the bigger tracks, where they don't lift and coast so much, they don't recharge, they're getting this Peloton. They love this word, Peloton. But it just means 20 drivers crashing into each other, all trying to go as slow as possible for three-quarters of the race and having a five-letter sprint to the finish. Unfortunately, to help me out greatly, there was a quote after this weekend's race, who was won by someone, but I've already retired from being an official Formula E reporter, Jean-Éric Vergne, who's a great character, who says what he thinks wherever he goes. Now, this is a man that allegedly, these guys, they're earning £1 million a season, maybe more. I don't know the exact numbers. That's all there are. Several of them. And Jev was one of the first, apparently, to start earning £1 million or $1 million. And he's now come out and stated, this is where he works. It's horrible. Honestly, I really don't like this style of racing. I hate it. I think every driver hates it. But I think it's the way we have to race, because it's a stupid formula. We're here to compete. We're here to win. If we have to drive in reverse, we're going to learn how to drive in reverse. But it doesn't mean that I like this kind of racing. It's truly horrible from a driver point of view. You're watching from the side behind above below. It's a mess.
Wow.
So he,
that's pretty damning.
$1 million allegedly going into his bank account every year, probably more. And so, I've always said this to people. Every time I've had a debate, I've said, I bet all the drivers, they're much happier doing a GT car at Le Mans, racing, than their other job in Formula E. I mean, so many of them have, you know, two jobs and they race in other series and stuff. So that's...
Hang on, just for the record. So you've officially retired. So next year, if Jaguar say, do you want to come to Monte Carlo and drink champagne on their yacht and there's some cars going past, I got a decline for you. Is that correct?
No, I'll be there. I'll just stay on the yacht. I'll look at the view and I'm not going to report. I'm just giving up. Sorry.
Okay.
Although there was actually one driver to mention, I've forgotten his name. The young English kid had a really good race that's in place of Sam Bird. Anyway.
But Nick Cassidy's still winning the championship.
Did he? Oh, is he really? I don't know.
Yeah. So what was the second least exciting for the weekend?
The second least exciting of all the racing I watched the weekend, and here you see, I'm being honest, always was IndyCar. IndyCar over in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that Louis Foster, who we championed a bit, he won a few races, almost won the Indy NXT Championship last year. He got his first win. He had a lot of bad luck in the first three rounds. Anyway, came through very strong win to win the second race the weekend. And of course, Jamie Chadwick had her first podium in the first race. Yeah. She was on the pace. She was 0.3 off pole, qualified sixth. She's still not aggressive. I've always said this. I always watch her on the first lap. And always seems to be a bit of a gap in front of her and a whole lot of cars in her gearbox. She's just got to get more aggression if I'm a teacher or a driver coach, because she's got the speed.
But why has she got to if she's now churning out these results and she's getting faster?
Because she is. Because
better.
She's got to start overtaking and defending. Well, she defends very well. So she's got to start overtaking.
I'm so pleased drivers. For her. Because I've said the whole way, oh, she's not fast enough. The guys are faster. Yeah. I'm so pleased to eat my words. Really am. She's a lovely girl, and clearly...
I tweeted that one podium meant more to her driver than all three W Series.
Absolutely,
fastest.
Yeah.
So and that's, good luck, Jamie.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
Hopefully, she'll continue up on the pace of the NXT. But the problem is, and I've said it before, every year it comes to this Indy Road. The Indy Road course is a rubbish racetrack. It always is a strategy race. You're in the middle of the race and you've got people on different tires, people lifting and coasting to save fuel, people stopping twice instead of three times. And the trouble is that the IndyCar is they have this qualifying system where you go from half the pack gets into the fast 12, and then if you get in the top six, you're in the fast six. So you use more tires, and you've obviously got a very limited tire allocation. But you've now got a race going on, and the commentator's talking about, well, he's out on the new alternatives, but he's got a new set of alternatives to use, which is the red faster tire, against someone who's on used primaries, as opposed to one guy who's got a set of new primaries, because he didn't go, oh. So it becomes every year an incredible strategy race. And it just never produces anything. Occasionally the last lap, but
Indy's, I mean, the Americans say it's the best racetrack in the world, but it's certainly up there in terms of...
Well, that's the oval. This is the road course, which of course was designed.
That's what I was just going to say. And the problem is, if anyone has ever been to Bedford Autodrome, where it's like very flat and very open, other than the oval bit, it's just like that. It's nothing. It's a nothing track. Not very...
Anyway, it was a track designed for Formula One, of course. That's probably why it's all so boring. But yeah, it's got a couple of good straights. They got their push to pass, but they use push to defend.
It's quite narrow, isn't it?
But both sort of straights are preceded by quite a lot of corners. So again, even though you can follow much, much closer in an Indy car than you can in a Grand Prix car, you're always just a bit two car lengths behind when you start the straight. A push to pass isn't as big an advantage as DRS. So it's a little bit of extra power. So, you know, Alex Palou, the champion, got all his strategy right. Quick driver and won it quite easily. There's a lot of wheel banging on the opening lap. It's always entertaining when you try 27 cars. And when you see them coming up the straight in the first lap compared to a Grand Prix, it is a huge visual excitement of your trackside. They have 27 cars. Of course, Romain Grosjean is there having a lot of fun.
They're smaller, aren't they?
Because they refuel, so the tanks are much smaller.
Yeah.
But it is always a dull race to watch. And I'd hate to recommend anyone going to Indianapolis to watch the road call racing.
And they didn't see many people there, so maybe they listen to you.
They never asked. I think they know. The Americans know as well. It's just I don't know why, isn't it? Somehow some tracks just don't work, and you look.
I enjoyed watching it. I like they do some really cool things with IndyCar in terms of
great onboards.
The onboards are brilliant. They've got that 360 camera that goes around. So
watching the drivers drive, you know, hear the engine revs, the wheels spin. Yeah, there's always that, but.
It just lots of auto coming out of the corners and stuff. Yeah. Lots of movement on the steering wheel. Much more so. More so the rallying. And I hope that's not where we're going next.
Yeah, I'm afraid it is. I forget. I'm working reverse. I haven't got how many events there were at the weekend. One, two. I'd had about fifth place for rallying at all the weekends. So we've just done sixth place for IndyCar. Fifth place rallying. Again, I hate to say it or mark it down rallying because it was in Portugal. Fantastic loose gravel stages, amazing pictures of
amazing
cars
crowds,
at all angles, leaping, huge crowds. They love it in Portugal. There's a famous jump on one of the stages where they just line it. But because you're not racing against each other, it's always the problem with rallying. You can't see who's going quicker than anyone else through a corner. There's no visual way of telling who's on the pace. It's all waiting for the split times and the clocks. And that forever will, to me, keep rallying in the middle ground of an entertaining weekend. And this weekend,
I don't think it's that, because I think there's many sports where it's on the clock and it's exciting. I think it's because name one. Cycling, pelotons, when they... they've got to break the split. But
they're racing down an oval and it's that half and half. I like those pursuits. Yeah.
Okay, well, you did put me on the spot, but there are some sports. But the point is, my point with this is, it is probably one of the most incredible things I've ever done in a car.
Yeah.
How fast they go, how good they are driving.
I know.
And I just think it's like, when you watch a Formula One car, it doesn't look very fast, or when you watch it on TV. And I just think it's that. I think they need to put it on plus 1.5 speed or something, because it's just phenomenal. How this isn't one of the most exciting sports in the world, I don't know. But it's just conveying that.
But it is if you're there. But on television, you can't do it live. Well, they do the last stage live. And that's so repetitive, you know, start line, camera on rear wheel spins, driver goes.
Exactly, yeah.
And then once that driver's started, you then interview the other bloke at the stage where you put the camera on the name and the rear wheel and go up to the driver into it. It's so formulaic. And, you know, if you're out there as a spectator, you're obviously out there with a lot of beer sitting by the hillside and you watch 10, 15 cars come through and that's your day's entertainment until they come back in the afternoon to the same stage and the same cars go through. It's very difficult to make it a mass spectator.
What's the answer? Seriously, because I was asked this question in Sardinia. They said, how do we make it more exciting? How do we get more people to understand how good it is? Because I'm completely converted now, but what is the answer?
Well, you go back to the Rally GB style, you know, where you do the whole country, where it's 5 or 6 days, you do Scotland, Wales, England. And people used to stand in the streets to watch the cars going through on the road section. You know, the rallies coming through, you know, and you just see the car. The fever would cover the whole country. But the expense of doing that is just too much now, because now they've got these little satellite areas, you know, with the central stage control where all the mechanics are parked up for the weekend. Whereas, of course, the old days, the mechanics would chase vehicles, you know, two sets of mechanics and one would get to the next. So the fever for the country to make it a sport that grabs more attention to the general public is to expand them into these much bigger, but then that's what they went away from deliberately because the cost went up. So I think it's stuck where it is. Interesting, Thierry Neuville had another day without his hybrid, and so lost about 20 seconds. I mean, luckily they've seen the light and they're trying to get rid of hybrid. But there's plenty of, I followed the rally, you know, on the highlights and stuff and on the timing screens. And Elfyn Evans had another bad weekend and had a puncture early on. His co-driver left his pace notes behind at one of the stores when he put this time code. So luckily, he had to get his phone out, which is a bit smaller than big pace note sheet, and read the pace notes on his phone. So he had another bad weekend. He ended up sixth, I think, after more punctures and spins and troubles.
FIA allow you to take a phone in your race suit? I don't think so.
I presume so. Yeah, because when you stop crashed, you're on the phone to your team, aren't you, saying, I'm all right? Yeah. You have to have your phone on that. But it's Sebastian Ogier, you know, doing one of his parts time at rallies for Toyota, held back a bit. But there was about four or five cars the end of day one within a few seconds. So it's always competitive early on. In fact, Ogier lost his intercom once. And the co-driver had to the sign language, slow, left. And apparently he only lost about 5 seconds or something on a stage, despite using sign language. But it ended up in this sort of head-to-head between Neuville had problems as well. He dropped back with Tanak and Ogier. But it was exciting. But then it's exciting if you know what's going on. And Ogier getting his 60th win, and he's just so smooth and calm and incredibly talented.
He's smooth and calm in the car, and smooth and calm out of the car as well. What a lovely, cool man he is. I really wish he would stay and do the whole season because even now he's got a chance. Neuville's still leading, but he's still got a chance to win. Yeah. And he upset all records and well.
Of course, Calle Rovanperä, Toyota's other part timer. He had a huge shunt, misjudged the breaking point. He was leading briefly on the second day morning, rolled his Toyota to ball. And Oliver Solberg was leading Rally 2, 100 yards. I think he saw the car in the woods. Probably went, blooming hell, that's Calle Rovanperä. Oh, I missed my breaking point, and had a huge roll himself, 100 yards past the place of the accident. So just shows concentration, you know. You just got to miss concentration. All those pace notes coming into your ear. And the pace notes, he's talking about 3 or 4 corners ahead nowadays. They've got so much in their head.
Was it you that told me that, or one of the other guys, that the 3 corners ahead? So yeah, every time, yeah. Incredible.
So you're going through a right hand, or this bloke saying flat left, and you think I'm in a right hand. You know,
yeah,
2 or 3 corners up.
Incredible.
So unfortunately, Gus Greensmith also WRC2 had a crash. He could have won it. There was a really good story though. Josh McClellan, 24-year-old Irishman who's sponsored by, they've got Motorsport Ireland Academy, and Craig Breen was his mentor in his younger days. So a very sad. Obviously, always remember Craig. He came second in WRC2. So a lot of joy for the Irish.
I should know this, but was that at Portugal? It wasn't the anniversary. No,
it was testing. It was recently. Oh, yeah, it's about this time of year. It was just before the Rally Croatia, I think, got a test, but I'm not sure what time it was.
I told you they still got the for Breen, for Craig Breen at the back of on the Hyundai. Awful. Anyway. Oh, no.
So yeah, entertaining in the middle of the pack, but not really. It can never be the most exciting weekend.
It was much more exciting. But I agree to watch on TV.
Entertaining. Mm. See, BTCC's next in fourth place or third. Okay. Fourth place, BTCC.
Well, I can't believe where this is going. I probably got to hazard a guess what's going to be first, but. BTCC. I mean, it was good. It was good.
Brian
Tatch is always fantastic.
Yeah. Lots of barging, pushing, shoving. But the main thing is now with touring cars, we've got to try and understand their new contrived, Alan Gow hates me saying contrived championship. Because the problem was when they dropped success balance, which works so well, you know, because a championship leader would try to qualify with 75 kilos or 30 kilos. So I thought the weight worked well because it kept the leader pushing him back, so you have to fight forward. And so they replaced that last year with the button for hybrid, but they only gave them 30 horsepower. So it was never enough to really make much difference. But they give them 60 horsepower now, and there's no doubt that's working. And you're getting some funny-looking qualifiers because if you can understand it. So the first 8 of the championship in qualifying have so many seconds per lap. And I think the championship lead has none, and then you have 2 seconds and 4 seconds. Until everyone from 8 downwards has 15 seconds on a lap throughout the whole of qualifying where they can use that. But then they're going down the team. They can only apply a different speeds. Now, this is in the computer. The driver won't have to watch his speed out. So like the leader can only put it in when he's over 90 miles an hour. The next guy over 88. The next guy over 84. The next guy over 80. I'm a spectator on the banks, can't see what's going on. And then also they brought in a new tyre and there's all sorts of regulations about when you must use it or not use it. They don't have enough markings on the sidewalls. So if you just turn the telly on, you watch a pack go through, you don't really know, well, hold on, who's on the, unless you're really listening to the commentator. And you don't know, if you're a spectator sitting in the banking with your beer and your rug around your legs. So it's almost too complicated, but it's working. It's brilliant.
Okay, it's just a spot quiz for you. IndyCar and Formula One cars, are the colours of the tyres on the inside or outside or both?
Well, they're definitely on the inside of Formula One cars. You can see them from the camera. They're definitely on the outside of IndyCars because they're very noticeable and I've no idea.
They're both.
Outside only, for IndyCar.
No, IndyCar on the inside. I only know that because I was watching it the Saturday at the IndyCar, and I saw the red tire from the onboard camera. Hey, it's on the outside as well. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
But that's a great way to be able to tell, isn't it? Straight away.
But anyway, I told Alan Gow about 5 or 6 years ago, put a red disc in the windscreen, wrong side, just a big red circle. Because most of the camera shots, the cars coming towards you, you're watching the same, you know, you can't see the side.
What do you want about put a red disc? So when you change your tyres, you've got to change your disc in the middle?
They'll stick on, no. Well, yeah, there's three races. Only in one of the three races.
Okay.
So one of the three races, you've got to put your red circle, bang, on the windscreen. Gow, he never listens. Then he suggested you're Alan Gow. He said, ah, mate, no, I know better than you. No.
Well, in fairness, he probably does.
Australian. but although all this contrived stuff is going on, there's still no doubt it's the same four as last year that are going to go for the title. Ash Sutton, Tom Ingram, Colin Turkington and Jake Hill. Colin Turkington qualified first, had two wins. But then, of course, he was back on the reverse grid, only finished eighth. Ash Sutton always fights wherever he is. He had three third places. Even the reverse grid, he got the points. Tom Engel had a 7th, a 2nd. Jake Hill, bad weekend. He had a 4th in the first race. And they had steering failure. I haven't found out. I wanted to Google or phone a friend. Going up to Druid's corner, brakes right at the edge of braking, turned the steering wheel, and nothing happened. He went straight, amazingly, with full brakes on in the gravel stop before hitting it. It was quite surprising it stopped that quick. And he sat in the car.
It's uphill, though, I guess. That helps.
The steering wheel like that.
Did he not have it connected? He didn't put it on properly?
No. I haven't found out whether it was the steering rack that broke. He had a wheel clash with someone. Well, they were all wheel clashing. There was a lot of pushing and shoving going on. It was very entertaining, the pushing and shoving. And also the good thing about all this reverse grid, that you always get these good story winners that win a reverse grid race. And they had someone, who was it, up in Donington, had a good, really good reverse grid winner with all the champions banging on the bumper. And so this week's good news story is for Rodan Pearson, this young, he's about 22-year-old Scottish driver, who's Tom Ingram's teammate. Everyone's happy for him. He's a lovely lad.
Yeah.
But I've still got this problem in my brain, you know, that it's reverse grid race. Does that really count as a win? I mean, of course it does if you're the driver and everybody's joyful for him. He had tears in his eyes and probably thanked his mum and his dad. But, you know, I mean, he'd done well during the meetings. He only qualified 19th, got up to 11th in race two, race one, and then got to 11th in race two, which when the draw came out for 11, put him on pole. So he was only the 11th best, but he, you know, if you can get out in the lead.
You've still got to bloody win it. You've got to stay there.
I know,
there.
I know,
you've got
but there's to, always something weird
it,
about the reverse.
I know what you mean. All that white and
especially
green
Monaco Formula 2 winners or Monaco. Yeah. I won at Monaco. No, you're the 10th best driver in qualifying. So you started first. The same again, it's this girls and women's thing, which you've got to be so careful because you don't want to diss anything. You're not sort of puncture balloons and that people had tried to think, but Abby Pulling, they made a huge fuss because she was the first woman to win a British Formula 4 race, but she won the reverse grid race. So, and if you put on the television, and oh, Abby, you're the first girl to win a Formula 4 race, I can't help but look at the telly, but oh, hold on, excuse me, you know, because in the main races, she finished 7th and 6th. You know,
which is still brilliant still and winning good. The race. I know, but it's all relative, isn't it?
She's come from winning those, you know, great weekend in Miami. You know, winning both Formula One academies, and I'm just getting but you know, the last year's Formula One, I'm going to mention it, but I don't want to mention it. But people have to know, you know, Marta Garcia, who won last year's Formula Academy, beating Abby Pulling, who was doing it as well. She's now making a debut in this Formula Renault Freca Europe. Where Dorian Pain, who we rate, is also doing. And she finished in Formula Renault 24th. So she had 23 boys quicker. You know, Dorian Pain was 23rd. And so this is the mountain they have to climb. And I don't know whether shying away from telling the truth is a good thing or not. You know, should you?
You can't. That's the problem. If you say anything, because, you know, we just want to say it how it is. But if you say anything, you're thrown under a bus, pretty much.
Yeah, no.
But, which is not the which is not what
that.
You're about.
Shouldn't have said that, Tiff. You can't lead regardless. The public to believe that Abby Pulling's about to jump in a Formula 3 car and win the championship. You know, it's very unlikely.
Maybe she will. Maybe she'll have the most phenomenal rest of season and she will go ahead and do that. Who knows?
Hopefully. But it's just, also it's to say it's going to take a lot of time. You know, I rate Dorianne Pam.
Exactly.
You know, she's only had about 3 single season races. You know, maybe she will be the one, but it takes 3 or 4 years. Yeah. You know, Abbey Pulling's been in Formula 4 for 3 or 4 years now. You know, she's been there anyway. But there were Porsches rolling over, there were Formula 4s clashing, there was Minis crashing and Legends entertaining. So the usual wonderful entertainment.
And talking about entertainment, the BTCC commentary team, they're very good. They've been together for a long time. And Jade Edwards is a brilliant addition to that team. He's still in the strop with you though, Paul O'Neill. He thinks you've got funny with him. You know when you write a tweet and if you're saying something, you put 5 exclamation marks or question marks. He thought you were in a strop with him. He thinks you're in a strop.
He was banging on once that time. He gets very emotional with crashes and you know even Tim Harvey was banging on. Someone did something. They're right in a way, but someone went off in a Porsche in practice and there's a new gravel going up the hill. And when he hit the end of the gravel, it's a bit of a jump. So Porsche went up and down. So Tim pointed out, they've got to sort that out. Got to flatten everything out. Everything. Nothing must be dangerous. Mustn't hit anything. But no, they get very emotional. But they do a fantastic job.
Absolutely. So what was the second?
I think NASCAR should have been behind. I struggled between BTCC and NASCAR because one's a national championship.
I can already tell you, BTCC is better.
This actual race last night, again, you need times 20. You need to be watching on your Skybox because there's long times with pace cars and slow. But the end of this race was one of the most exciting dramas. And it's 185 miles an hour. That's the other point. You're not talking about little club racing. You know, this is an international big boys circuit, big boys and big balls.
Cheeky kid.
And it's this famous Darlington 1 1/3 mile track. And it's 185, it's egg-shaped, so it's not like easy. There's a lot of braking and turning in, and it's high. But also, the shape of the track means the fastest line is up against the wall. And when you say up against, I'm talking about permanently an inch from a wall at 185 miles an hour, keeping that line. And some drivers can get within half an inch, like, you know.
How do they do it?
Carl Larson. I know, and I've talked about Carl Larson, who's an expert at it, but with the strategy and trying to stop only once in between the stage races, Carl Larson won the first stage, then there's the longer next stage, he tried to stay out longer to do the tyres, and so the tyres go off, and then you're trying to stay out. You have this bizarre thing that someone that's 26th in the race that's pitted earlier to get the new tyres because he can't drive it anymore, they will be overtaking the leaders like they're standing still. So you've got literally Logan Sargeant going by Max Verstappen as if he's still, because the new rubber on those ovals is so important. And a lot of the talented guys that tried to make the stint last longer, including Larson clobbered the wall twice. He was knocked himself out. Kyle Busch, Ryan Blaney, all went out from hitting the wall because they're just on the limit at 185 miles an hour through these races. But it just all came alive at the end. I mean, just the ending is what made it third place in my list because it was. Well, I've got two more to come. I have because it was this battle, and it's a bit of a story that leads back to the last race because Tyler Reddick had dominated the whole thing. So Tyler Reddick is probably the second best to Larson, just sitting up against the wall, and led virtually all the way from stage 2. But they had a yellow flag with about 20 or 30 laps to go, and. The old champion, 2012 champion, Brad Keselowski, started on the inside. So the restart, you obviously take the outside because you want that high line. You want to be on the wall side. But Keselowski just stayed on his inside. Because when you stay on the inside, you get half a car length ahead. And they're always looking. As soon as you get an inch fully ahead, your spotter will go clear right, clear high, clear high. And you go up into the bit in front. So that's what you're always struggling to do. So for lap after lap, Keselowski's diving up the inside and then coming up and getting sometimes a foot of car. Not
what
number
is he? Is he not number 12, is he? Because number 12
is 6, Keselowski. 12's okay. Ryan Blaney. Blaney's 12, I think. But in the meantime, coming up in third place was Keselowski's teammate, the Ford team, which Keselowski's actually a team owner of, was Chris Buescher. And Chris Buescher, of course, was the driver that lost the weekend before by the famous 0.0001 seconds, trying desperately to get his first win of the year. So Busch is now, because these two are side by side, so he's catching up. And the first time he caught him, he just slammed into the back of Brad, his teammate, to try and push him past, literally. He must have hit him doing 5 or 10 miles an hour faster. But that didn't work. And in fact, Busch had dropped back a bit. So the Brad battle went on and on and on. And eventually, they were so busy hitting each other because they're so tight. Kozlowski's pushing Redding up into the wall. So this time he came storming up Busch, but he had so much speed. He must have had 15 miles an hour extra because there were two cars pulling him. So he just swept by on the left, came up in the lead. I'm in the lead now. I've got this. I'm going to win with about 6 or 7 laps to go. And so then Redick then caught him up. So now we've got Busch, Redick, and still got in third place Kozlowski. And Redick, who'd led the dominated the whole race, did a desperate, with about 4 laps to go, I think, 6 laps to go, I think, did a full dive down fully inside. So he was then a car length ahead, well, not car length, room, and just came up the hill. But Busch had given a bit more throttle and he didn't clear him and he hit him instead. Well, to be fair, there was a bit, they had a fight afterwards, of course. It's always good part of NASCAR. But in fact, when I watched it, Busch, they blamed Redding for putting Busch in the wall. Busch had actually hit the wall on his own whilst trying to go a bit quicker to stop it. Anyway, they both had punctures and damaged their cars. So Kozlowski cruised through to his first win. It's a great story again because he hasn't won for 3 years. He hasn't won for 110 races. He's 40 years old, former champion and co-owner of the team. So there's stories like that.
But it must happen in NASCAR. It must happen where there's some serious, serious injuries when somebody deliberately tries to push somebody.
Not anymore. That's why they're getting worse at it, because nowadays, as in all motorsport, you know, the way they drive and knock into each other. The end of a Formula 4 race, the last Formula 4 race, there was a pretty dramatic overtake on the last lap, which I thought was a bit unjust by the bloke that went on to win the race. But the commentator all said, that was fine, it was just racing. But I mean, the guy that won said, we left the bloke on the outside a car's width of room, but then they clashed wheels. So no, that's another sideline. So it just, that last 15 minutes made it the third most entertaining thing of the weekend. And Busch had a row with Redick, and Redick trying to apologise.
All right. I BTCC fans, Paul O'Neill's never going to forgive you after that. So second
And the commentary's exciting... better, Paul. Commentary's better, Paul.
Yes, that's true. The second most exciting motorsport of the weekend was...
Well, again, it's so hard to judge. It was the World Sports Cars that spun.
You're going for just because of Iron Dames, aren't you?
No. I didn't get just the event. So I'm really talking about the event. I'm not going to detail the race apart from a couple of incidents, obviously, but people are tweeting, you know, World Sports Cars are taking over from Formula One, you know, for the family. It's not. You know, you're not going to get the sort of people that's going to Grand Prix racing looking, where's Lando? I can see Lando. Where's Max? You know, waving your clackers and waving your flags. It's for the real enthusiast. And it's become what used to, it was getting a bit disappointing 2 or 3 years ago. It's now come back for the real Le Mans loving, camping Le Mans enthusiasts are loving it even more. So the crowds are growing slowly. But you're never going to drag Formula One fans to a world 6 hours. 6 hours in my corporate box. Think how much champagne I can drink in that, you know. But it's now with so many hypercars, with 19 hypercars and 19 GT3s, it's such a spectacle. There's something going on. You know, Spike will walk around the edge to enthusiasts, change your viewing point for a while. You've got your radio in or your laptop or your phone telling you what's going on. The cars are very spectacular. You've got a Ferrari, factory Ferrari. As the balance of power going on, which you might understand or not bother to try and understand, which tries to keep the cars equal. Ferrari, again, they have lots more tinkling. You can have 5 more horsepower and you can have 5 more kilograms and all sorts of little tweaks going on. But Ferrari, again, were 1, 2, and 3 on the grid. So it's actually quite interesting. Toyota was still off the pace. I'm not sure whether they qualified 6th or 7th. Then, of course, it's Le Mans next. And, of course... there's always talk like Ferrari, they said last year, didn't really have any pace in the first opening races. Then all of a sudden, they won Le Mans easily. Well, not easily, because it's not easy ever. Because the balance of power helped them. So everyone's wondering now, Toyota actually got something up their sleeve.
Yeah.
I know, but then they, because they got so much information from the computers of cars, they could almost see if a driver was sandbagging because they could see he wasn't using for, I don't know. I don't think they are sandbagging Toyota, but so Ferraris were dominating again. And there's one of so much racing. As you said, the GT3, the Iron Dames, they were leading for a long time, weren't they, the girls? And then they dropped back towards the end. They had a bad wheel change.
They qualify well. They just had a bit of bad luck. He's going to have three seasons at Ferrari, and with Adrian Newey, he's going to win the world title twice more, and then he's going to do Le Mans in a Ferrari in 2028, Lewis.
You've now expanded your Lewis insider knowledge, have you? Not only do you know 100% he's going to Ferrari, you now know his full entire race program.
Lewis is the type of guy that will end up driving Le Mans.
I'd like to think he does. I wish they all would because it's such an enjoyable thing to do. You know, we hopefully got Vettel doing it soon. I'm not sure he still might do it this year.
He's going on about coming back to Formula One. No, Sebastian.
No. But of course, the headline for the YouTubers was this huge accident, which brought a lot more publicity to the World Endurance Championship than anything else. Ferrari were running 1-2. Looking good to win the race when this moment when Earl Bamber, the Cadillac, was trying to overtake for third spot Neil Yarny in the Porsche, one of the Porsches. And he just misjudged. They were both going past the BMW and he just pulled out of the slipstream of the Porsche in front of him to go up the inside. But there was still a little bit of BMW on his inside, which just turned him sharp right. So this frightening looking crash, I mean, just almost rolling over and just almost spinning in midair, which brought out the red flags, which did bring a bit of controversy because the race was only 4.25 hours old for 6 hours. And Porsche have since protested the result because they didn't restart until after the 7 p.m. So 6 hours was up at 7 p.m. So Ferrari, in retrospect, is saying, well, you've had your 7 hours. You can't restart the race anymore. The result should have stood. And the problem was that Ferrari hadn't pitted. The two Porsches that ended up first and second had just pitted for a fuel. So they got that extra pit stop done before the red flag came out. So very soon after the race restarted, the Ferraris had to peel off the pits, Porsches out front. So a bit of controversy that they might have lucked slightly into it, a bit like Lando might have slightly lucked into. But we don't care because it was two British drivers in the British privateer Porsche. I mean, this is why this is proved what World Endurance Sports is always about. It was like Yost winning at Le Mans, Richard Lloyd Racing winning. You know, privateer teams in customer cars can compete with the factory. So this Jota team, which is Dave Clark, is a famous co-owner. And they won it. And it was this two British drivers, Will Stevens and Callum Ilott, did an amazing final stint. He pitted for the last pit stop, didn't put fresh tyres on, whereas the factory Porsche that was chasing second place put fresh tyres on, but couldn't catch him. So wonderful driving going on. So Will Stevens and Callum Ilott for Britain stood on the top of the podium. And Norman Nato, who should have been there, because they run three drivers now. I don't know actually why they run three drivers. But Norman Nato, poor old Norman, was contracted to be in Berlin driving a Formula E car. So he didn't go on the podium at Spa in a world, which I'm sure he would have much rather have done. But the Porsches are doing so well. Against this balance of power is going to be tricky because the Porsches and the Cadillacs are all the LM Daytona prototypes, which have a different hybrid regulations as opposed to the factory-run created Toyotas and Ferraris. But the Porsches seem to be the car to have because they actually won in America. America also, Laguna Seca on Sunday had a driver. Another British driver had a win. Nick Tandy, with his French co-driver Martin Jaminet, won the Laguna Seca race in another Porsche.
I've raced against Nick Tandy.
GT, you have in your 4KAs.
Yes.
Yeah, GT, as you said, the GT3, there's always two races going on, of course. And the GT3 was a very exciting finish. The Iron Lynx male-driven Porsche was leading ahead of Lamborghini. He was ahead of the two Porsches, but he had to stop for a splash and dash. And the two Porsches came through to come first and second with a last lap change of place because the leading Porsche was a bit short of fuel. And the Porsche the second wasn't, and so took the lead with about a lap and a half to go.
And so, yeah, just, with but, you know, World Sports Cars, good?
That's it. Yeah, Spa. But it's Spa. Spa in the sunshine. No rain.
Yeah, but Spa, is it good for that
Perfect. Yeah, perfect. Lots of long straights, plenty of overtaking manoeuvres, traffic going on, lots of people, overtaking cars is such a part of the skills. Wherever you're sitting, there's always something going on in front of you when you've got 35 cars going around. So
it makes it interesting. It's interesting. We didn't mention this in the news, but Spa, because Liberty are saying they want more special venues for Formula One.
Forgot
and Spa, Barcelona, Hungary, Brazil, they all could be going. All these historic tracks that make Formula One made for more.
Because for Liberty now, you have to have special events. And these the new people joining the block are paying Liberty $50 million for the honour of running a car. And all the current tracks are sort of down at 21, 23 million. I don't know what Silverstone, lucky we've got a 10-year deal for Silverstone, so I don't know what money was.
Surely they'll never get rid of Silverstone.
Well, luckily, we hope not. But, if they're talking about Spa and Brazil and places, because they're all trying to find a street circuit, aren't they? Is there a street town near you? Can we build a racetrack in the middle of a town so our rich people can fly in their jets and take a limo to the racetrack? So the most entertaining was, as ever, it very MotoGP. Rarely gets beaten, the MotoGP. A great commentary team again. Susie Perry hosting it and fronting it, and they're like a little happy family, and they don't shout and scream too much, but when they get excited, you can tell the excitement, and that they... they're marveling. They've got ex-riders, marveling at these current riders. And they run even around this stupid Bugatti circuit, which is a silly little circuit, a go-kart track, which Formula One cars tried in 1966, never went back again. It's just a massive hairpin with one quite fast S-bend and one curve, which for the bikes isn't flat, the big curve for entry to the chicane after the start-finish straight. They always start Moto3, always entertaining, a bunch of about six or seven. With this Colombian, David Alonso, who dropped it in the lead down at Jerez, threw away a win. He just suddenly switches on. He runs about third or fourth of the packs and then just, boop, 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 I win. Even though he's winning by about half a wheel from the other six riders. Moto3, no job for the British boys. Scott Ogden had one of his better qualified 12th when he crashed out again. Josh Watley finished 21st. I'm sadly fear they're not going to get to the front. Moto3, Jake Dixon was sort of back on the pace in practice, but then he had a few crashes over the weekend, losing confidence, bending knees. So he didn't feature at all. Moto2 was won by the Spanish guy, Sergio Garcia. Not the golfing Sergio Garcia, for those with longer memories, but a Spanish 21-year-old who was a Moto3 runner-up a couple of years back. So Spain always coming through the young riders. But a MotoGP race, the sprint race was won yet again by the sprint master Jorge Martin in his satellite Pramac Ducati to increase his championship lead. And Francesco Bagnaia crashed out in Jerez in the sprint race. This time he went from second on the grid to 14th. He then ran himself off the road that he pitted for bad hand. He actually was on a spare bike because he dropped his nice race bike in the warm-up or something. So he had to go on a spare bike. So he scored no points again in the sprint. But then we had this Grand Prix between Jorge Martin and Bagnaia, just that went on for about 7/8 of the race for them. So there was lots of stuff going on, but this battle for the lead between the factory Ducati and the satellite Ducati and Martin, who wants his job, well, not his job, wants to be his teammate next year. But Bagnaia led most of the way before Martin got back. But meanwhile, this crash. Mark Marquez, this entertainer who's back big time in MotoGP. Now he's got off that horrendous Honda that kept on throwing him up the road every time he tried to go fast in it. Now, he only qualified 11th. I don't know what he did wrong in qualifying, but he was second in the sprint race from 11th of the grid. And in the main race, he got a bit held back. But he came through. I think they qualified 13th. He wasn't even 11th. And the two out front were well out front. But Marquez got to third and then just caught the front two with four laps to go. And so you now have three masters, just duking it out. And it was only in the last lap that Marquez took a lunge on Bagnaia, go down into the fast chicane to take second place off him. And they all finished within a wheel of a wheel. So it wasn't much overtaking, but it was just epic race. Like the NASCAR race, it was just three of them. You don't need 40 or 20. Pedro Costa, though, blotted his copybook. He could well have been well up with the battle for the lead because he tried to go for third place, I think, and tried to outbreak. And it was incredibly, he dropped it in between the one he was trying to overtake and the one in front of him. It was just a bike length of room for him to slide off in front of them. So not a good race for Pekka, who... Pekka?
Pedro Costa.
So MotoGP again, I think, was the most entertaining motorsport of the weekend. We ought to, people comment more below. Are you still listening, Eli, out there? If you go to YouTube, if you're just listening on Spotify, just
lots
drop
of people listening
YouTube.
On Spotify. More listening on Spotify than they watch
just
on YouTube.
Pop on your YouTube and comment on what you thought was the most entertaining, and whether I should ever watch Formula E again.
And how we should help WRC make it more popular. And what about some sponsorship?
Yes. brought to you by Mugs Drinks.
Exactly.
I could be drinking from a mug from advertising.
Exactly. And you could meet Tiff with Silverstone 16th of June. Yeah.
Yes.
Have some lunch at Silverstone.
Steady on me. We can't push. Are they paying? This weekend, quickly. My son's actually off to Imola. Mate of his is getting married and they're having their stag do in...
Brilliant.
In Bologna.
I'm guessing that's Harry. And not
that's Harry.
George or
Harry's
Jack.
There. Well, I've got a nightmare, just personal deal. This, we're watching Southampton going to Wembley on Friday night, which he has to go to by Harry because he's obviously a huge Southampton fan. That is at Southampton. We'll finish about 10 p.m. He has a flight to Bologna at 7 o'clock on Saturday morning. He has to be at Heathrow at 5 o'clock on Saturday morning. How do you think Harry thinks he's going to get to Heathrow at 5 o'clock on Saturday morning?
Harry Nadell, get on your bike, son. No, I would not be doing that. As much as I love my children, I would not be getting up at 3 a.m., 4 a.m. for that. Unless you win.
What else do you do? What do you do with these children? What do you do? I'm not going to buy them a cab for 300 quid. Anyway, will be there. Harry will probably have a hangover. I hope they don't get too drunk on the Saturday night and oversleep. Around the world, the Super Formula is in Autopolis, the Japanese championship. But no Teo Pourchaire. Teo Pourchaire had a miserable first couple of races in Super Formula. Has managed to pick up this IndyCar drive with McLaren. Because their driver that was going to do the season broke his wrist badly and can't come back. Because that's a shame. I rather wanted Ilott to get that right. Because Ilott also did some stand-ins and showed probably better than Pourchaire in the race he did. But Pourchaire's got the ride. Well, I think Ilott's doing the Indy 500 in the car because Pourchaire's never done an oval in his life before, so they're not using him.
He's quite versatile, like Callum Ilott, isn't he?
Yes, he's a versatile driver. Lad, and he's got a character. You know, you see him interviewed, and he's bubbling and laughing. He doesn't get all anal and full of his own self or his sponsor. He's just a lovely lad. So talented as well. The Aussie supercars for you Brits down in Perth and NASCAR, Wilkesboro. The Wilkesboro 5/8 of a mile. Always there to entertain. But if you're back in Britain, the only place to be is Donington for the British Superbikes. Head there for royal entertainment.
Indeed. Thanks for joining. See you next week.